Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Chaye Sarah. This week, Rabbi David Levenkruz discusses Chaye Sarah. Rabbi David Levenkruz is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi David Levenkruz.
Thank you, Larry, and Shabbat Shalom to us all. This week's parasha is Chaye Sarah. And the class that I'm teaching now is called Falling in Love, in this case, literally. In Bereishit 24, verses 63 to 67, which is the first passage in your source sheet, we read the story of the famous meeting between Isaac and Rebekah. Isaac is going out in the field towards evening, lifnot erev, he's going lasuach besadeh, to walk in the field, or to chat in the field. And the text then says, Vayisa enav v'yar, and he raises his eyes and saw, v'hine gmalim ba'im, he sees camels coming, v'tisa Rivka et enav, and Rivka put up her eyes, she raised her eyes, v'tere et Yitzchak, and she sees Isaac. So, first I have a small thing to say about this interchange, before we go on to the main part of today's shiur, which is the next three words, V'tipol me'al hagamal, and she fell off the camel. And that is what is going on over here. Some people have pointed out a lack of equality or a lack of parallelism between Isaac and Rebecca. Isaac sees camels, and people say, well, that shows where his mind was. He was more interested in commerce than romance. Whereas Rebecca sees Isaac. And they see it as being an example of where these people were in two different minds, or perhaps men and women think about two different things. I think that this is a little bit harsh, and I think that there are two other ways to explain it. One is that Rebecca, Rivka, knows she's about to see her future husband, so that's obviously on her mind. Whereas Isaac has no idea when the servant is going to come back, and therefore he sees camels. But I think there's something even more likely to explain this lack of parallelism, and that is if we think of it as a movie. When Isaac looks into the distance, Rivka and the camels are further away, and therefore it's natural that what he sees is a camel, but he's unable to make the figures. Whereas when Rivka looks up, she's already closer, and she therefore sees Yitzchak, and as we said, she fell from the camel. Vatipol me'al hagamal. And it's fascinating to see how it is translated. The JPS, which is, for want of a better word, the official translation of the Jewish community, the Jewish Publication Society, says she alighted from the camel, which makes it sound very almost British upper class. She alights from the camel. And in fact, in the East, people do dismount when they see a person of importance. Rashi, translated as Hishmita Atzma La'aretz, she let herself slide towards the ground. And the Rashbam comments, she fell off the camel for modesty, since she had been riding like a man because of the camel's kicking. The Svorno, echoing the idea earlier about this is what people do in the ancient Near East to show respect, says, Hechnia Rosha behiota ala gamal lichvod Yitzchak. She bowed her head to Isaac from her seat on the camel as a sign of respect. No falling, just bowing her head. I think it's clear in all these translations that there seems to be some antipathy, some reticence at saying, like I translated it, saying she fell off the camel. It somehow seems too vulgar, too graphic, too physical. And what I would like to claim is that perhaps there's a question of romance or coquettishness going along. Perhaps we have this woman who is so excited to see her husband-to-be that she falls off almost in, you know, she can't believe that she's going to be married to such a gorgeous guy. Or maybe there's some coquettishness. You know, let me just fall off the camel onto the ground, and maybe that nice man will have to come and pick me up. I read it with a certain type of playfulness, but clearly this is not the way the translators nor the commentators are reading it. So let's first look at who's afraid of falling off a camel. Why is there this reluctance to see Rivka as a romantic being? If we look at the passage we just read, we see in Bereshit 24:67 that at the end of the passage, after she asks the servant who this person is, and he says, "This is my master," and she takes her veil and covers herself, and the servant tells the story. At the end of this passage, it says, "Vayikachet Rivka," and he took Rivka, "V'tiyeh lo le'isha," and she became his wife, and he loved her. And it's very, very interesting, the way that it's traditionally understood, and also the pshat, as far as I'm concerned, the plain meaning, is he took Rivka, which the rabbis understand as marriage, ki yikach ish isha, v'tiyeh lo le'isha, and she became his wife, v'ya'aveh, and then he loved her. Only after he married her did he love her. And Samson Raphael Hirsch, the famous commentator from the 1800s, says the more she became his wife, the more he loved her. Just as this marriage of the first Jewish son, so too, most Jewish marriages in our day are contracted not on the basis of passion, but on the strength of reason and judgment. I don't know if he's accurate about the anthropological or sociological reality, but we see here an emphasis on control, on chasteness. It might have been because of living in a Christian society. It might have been some anti-romantic trend. It could be that there's a very, very strong tendency post-exile in Judaism in general to downplay the activists, to downplay the powerful, to downplay the sexual or the erotic, and to play up the ideas of balance and of virtue and of stability. Whatever it is, Samson Raphael Hirsch sees this as being a statement in favor of logic and rationalism when it comes to marriage. And Rashi seems to be going in the same direction, although it's a little bit less clear. Ra'ata oto hadur, she saw him lordly or distinguished or manly, v'toha mepanav, and gazed at him in astonishment, felt abashed in his presence, wondered at him. Here we have a tiny drop more of the romantic, but still there's very, very much an idea of order, of hadur, of but I think over here we get a slightly stronger feeling about, you know, a certain romance that might be involved. I was puzzled by this and maybe a little disappointed. And I have to say I searched high and low to try and find passages that played up the romantic nature of this incident, the erotic nature of this incident. And I really didn't find, until in a very strange place, I found a Kabbalistic teaching that speaks about five people who had love at first sight. The first, I'm going to mention three of them. The first one is the story of when Adam meets Eve, and he says, "Zot hapam, etzem me'atzamai." This time, there's going to be bone of my bone, ubasar mifsarim, and flesh of my flesh. According to tradition, he had tried to make friends or to mate with all the animals, but that's midrash, but this didn't work. But when he finally met Chava, he says, "This one, lezot yikra isha, this one will be called woman, ki me'ish lachazot, because she was taken from man. And this, by the way, is seen as the highest level. This was love at first sight. There's delight. There's emotionalism. It's all very, very wonderful. And this is seen as the highest level, because literally, she was the only woman in the world for him. And he was the only man in the world for her. A second example in this Kabbalistic teaching is what we just looked at, that she fell from the camel, Yitzchak and Rivka, that she knew instinctively that this was the man from promise to her, and she felt intense emotion that they were soulmates. A third example that is given, and this is seen as the third highest, is Yaakov and Rachel. When Jacob sees Rachel, it's love at first sight. The sight is so strong that it gives him strength, and he's able to roll the stone from the top of the well. And we read, Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, Jacob kissed Rachel, v'yesa et kolo, and he raised his voice, Vayefk, and he cried. Three beautiful examples of love at first sight. Just FYI, that two others, which are seen as being on a lower level, one is David and Abigail, and one is David and Bathsheba. In all of these, there is an idea of that wonderful choking feeling when you meet somebody and you can't really speak and your mouth is dry because you know that this might be the real person for you, and you become awkward and you fall or you are a klutz. And I think many of us have stories about this, about, oh, how I behaved ridiculously, or I wasn't sure what to do the first time I met the person who became my beloved. And it's fascinating if we look at the text. What is Yaakov doing? He is playing with danger. He's going out, if not Erev, towards night. In times before electricity, this was a dangerous place. And he meets Rivka and he marries her. He's breaking the umbilical cord. Up until now, he has been involved in mourning for his mother. But now he's gaining control of his life. And ladies and gentlemen, to gain control of our life, to become full people, there's an irony that one of the things we most have to be able to do is to risk. We have to learn to take chances. And one of the most important places that we have to learn to take chances is in romance, in flirtation. In many, many parts of the Jewish world today, this is done, Ala Samson, Raphael Hirsch, in a very ordered way, with shidduchim and with speaking to rabbis. But even there, in order for people to form a relationship, even in a very controlled environment, there has to be that moment of risking, of joking, of telling what you really feel, of revealing of oneself in order to become a grown up, in order to become a full human being, in order to become a member of society. One has to be prepared to risk. And one of the most important places one has to be prepared to risk is in the issue of romance. So what do we learn from this? First of all, I had a teacher who used to speak about stealing the pshat, that we need always be aware that there is a plain meaning of the text, a contextual meaning, and not to lose it. Secondly, what I think this Kabbalistic teaching is saying, and I think this is a very, very important idea, is that romance and coquettishness are part of holiness. It's not like, now I'm being holy, now I'm being frum, and now I'm being a little bit naughty or a little bit romantic. The sex drive, the romantic drive, the erotic drive, the drive to take chances, the desire to be coquettish or flirtatious, all of these are part of who we are. All of these are part of the inner power that we have, and all of these can be used towards Hashem. If we look at Shir HaShirim, for example, we have an example of a beautiful book, which again, in its pshat meaning, is celebrating and reveling in the erotic and in the romantic. But finally, very, very importantly, I find it fascinating that the place that I found the most human, the most romantic, perhaps the most contextual, the most pshat answer was in the world of Kabbalah. We're very, very fond of talking about the acronym of Pardes, Pshat Remez Drash Sod. Pshat is the clearest meaning which makes sense in context. Remez are things that are hinted at in the text but are not stated clearly. Drash is exegesis, taking the text and learning a lesson from it. And Sod is Kabbalah, the secret mystical meanings of the text, things that are there but that we don't really understand how they're there. Sod is often seen as being esoteric by Litvaks like me, who like to emphasize the rational and the understandable, sometimes a little absurd. But I think it's fascinating over here that to some extent what the pshat, the plain, clear meaning, is actually found in the sod, is actually found in the world of the mystical. And I think this is saying something very, very powerful, that perhaps the scheme is a little too neat of pshat, remez, drash, sod. If we're trying to understand the meaning of something, we're trying to understand the essence of something, we're trying to understand, if you will, the pshat of it. We're trying to understand what the meaning of an incident is. We need all four. We need all four. And even what might seem esoteric, absurd, out of this world, fantastic, very, very often, in its out of the worldliness, of its out, in its strangeness, comes closest to what the meaning might be. And if ever there was an area of life that this was appropriate to, it was for romance. If ever there was an area in which something can only be explained using the world of mystic, the world of the absurd, the world of the esoteric, it was this. And therefore it is no surprise to me, in fact, on second thoughts, that this is where I found the romantic interpretation. Whether you found a person for you, or whether you're looking for a person for you, or whether you wish to express yourselves in your life in different ways, may all your risks go well. May people have the power to fail and to succeed, and enjoy your romances. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thank you for tuning in. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.